Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show online at edexcellence.net. Now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, the cherry bomb of the education policy community, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mikey. How you doing, babe?
I'm doing well. You got big 4th of July plans coming up?
Yes. Jolene is going down to Atlanta, and I am going to be hunched over my laptop. Okay, that's kind of sad.
That's very sad.
So that's not really...
This is what you get for trying to write, at least 2 books in the same year, if not more.
Oh. What are you doing for the 4th, babe?
Well, we're going down to see my family down in South Carolina.
Yep. Oh, good times.
Good times.
You going to get out on the ocean?
We're actually going to fly on the 4th of July because, you know what? Got a good deal on our plane ticket. But you know what? None of our listeners really care about that.
No.
And we got a lot to cover because it is our special 4th of July Supreme Court edition of the Education Gadfly Show.
Because Supreme Court term just ended last week.
Lots of stuff happening. Several cases on education. And we're going to dive into them all, Rick.
I'm getting a little tickly thinking about it.
You get tickly. Ready for this. Amber's Research Minute is going to be about a study by one Frederick M. Hess.
Whoa.
So this is a little, little extra loving.
I didn't even see this coming.
I know. And then Stafford's going to rate that reform. Does the rate that reform have anything Rick associated?
Or court related?
It's a court theme. We got themes.
All right. So lots to cover. Let's get started with Pardon the Gadfly.
Court cases. We had 3 of them recently. First up, in an 8-1 decision, the Supreme Court said Arizona school officials went too far when they strip searched a teenage girl because they thought she was hiding ibuprofen on her person. Is this going to cut into school officials' ability to enforce zero tolerance policies and the like?
Yes. Oh. More.
That's all you got to say for yourself? Yes. Come on, 8-1, baby. This was an easy case.
I thought Thomas's dissent was terrific. He said, look, we expect educators to enforce discipline in schools. We pass these zero tolerance policies. Now the Supreme Court has told any kid who's bright enough to Google that if you're about to get caught with something, as long as you stick it in your underwear, you're off the hook.
Well, come on, that's not quite fair. I mean, they didn't go that far. They didn't say that you can never strip search children. They said that you had to have stronger reasons of concern than they had in this particular case. It was a very narrow decision.
Right. So, which also says that as school district officials, you get to guess where the line lies and when you're going to get over it. And, geez, we haven't seen this movie before. We know that school officials, when there's ambiguity, tend to play it safe. Because if you guess wrong, you wind up with years of adjudication and your district has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if you don't search, nobody's upset.
We're talking about children here, right? I mean, what about at least calling the parents, and having the parents come in and somehow be involved in a process like this? I mean, I'm sorry, as a parent, I'm not so psyched if some assistant principal decides to strip search my child because they think they've got Tylenol in their bra.
Totally, I'm totally down with that. But if Nico's wearing a bra, I'm a little concerned. But the point well taken. No. All I'm saying is that the court, once again, has fudged everything. In fact, when Robert spoke to some school officials a couple days after a decision, his reassurance was, well, we said you guys aren't personally liable. Right. So it doesn't matter that the lines are murky.
He said, if you guess wrong, then we won't hold you personally liable, which is, this is true. Look, so it is a mess. Right. It is a mess. There's no clear guidance to school.
If they had set out a test which said, look, past a certain trigger point, one has to engage the parents, that would at least been some bright lines that districts could follow. But what we've got is just more ambiguity, which doesn't tell educators what they need to do.
All right. But they do know if you fear that some girl has ibuprofen in her bra, you are not allowed to strip search her. And there will be, this will be very helpful.
And this is going to all be fine until the next time some kid actually has something that's going to be serious and harmful on them.
Yeah.
And some other kid takes it and dies of an overdose. Yeah. And then there's going to be up in arms about why the heck didn't the folks at school protect the kid.
Okay, Christina, topic number 2.
The court also ruled that parents can be reimbursed for the private school tuition of their special ed children, even if the kids never set foot in a public school. Is this going to open the floodgates to the private placement of special ed students?
Okay, so I'll admit I'm no expert on this particular part of special education law, but my sense here is that this is not going to open the floodgates. the situation is this. If a parent believes that the public school system cannot provide the services that his or her child needs under their individual education plan, goes ahead, puts them in a private school, starts paying the tuition, and then tries to get the money back from the school district, they still have to convince a hearing officer or maybe even up the chain a judge that, in fact, the public school system cannot serve that child well. I think this is fine. I mean, this certainly makes more sense than putting the child in the public school for a year and have them suffer through bad education only to prove the case.
And I think this actually, you know, this does reward gaming like crazy. Because the problem is that if you're low income or middle class, you only get the money back on the back end. So you've got to have the money to lay out for tuition on the front end. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, for, you know, well, relatively well-off parents who want to game this thing, they now no longer are required to go through any particular process within the district. They can just stick their kid where they want to be and then open up the legal proceedings.
So the point is, if you're pretty sure your child needs to get private school services, you have nothing, not too much to lose by at least trying to get it reimbursed by the district. Though there'll probably, you know, there are additional legal expenses, things like that.
Or if you want your kid in a private placement and you've got a good attorney, you can just go to work on these districts. I mean, it's not hard to back these districts down a lot of times.
All right. Well, this is an empirical question. We'll see over the next decade how this plays out.
Nice.
Last one. Finally, the court sent a long-running case back to a lower court to decide if Arizona has done enough to educate English language learners under a 1972 federal law. Interestingly, they stressed the importance of results over spending. How important is this shift?
So this is the Flores ruling, and it could be significant. I mean, I guess we'll have to see how it gets interpreted and how it gets used. But the basic upshot was that it was a real blow to the adequacy folks, to the Michael Rebell camp, because the court essentially said that it's not just how much money you spend or whether you're allocating money to certain populations, it's the system in place. And in fact, what happened was Rick Hanischek put together a really impressive amicus brief for this, in which the court actually cited the Hanischek's work on impacts of spending and such to say, look, Arizona has in place a reasonable accountability system. It's focused on results. It doesn't necessarily need to abide by particular directives regarding expenditures. Has a chance to be really significant.
So one question is whether state courts will now see this and follow the same reasoning. Of course, most of these adequacy cases are decided at the state level. They're interpreting their own state constitutions. Whether they will buy this line of argument as well remains to be seen.
That's right. And an important thing is that you made exactly the right point, Mike, that state constitutions are in place, so it's specific state constitutional clauses, which of course is not necessarily what, in fact, is not what the Supreme Court is addressing.
But let's ask the most important question. Is this the height of cool wonkiness to get cited by a Supreme Court decision?
Well, you know, when Jay got cited in Zelman,
Jay Green
got cited in Zelman
the
several
voucher,
times.
The footnotes. Decision.
That was in his biography for at least like the next 4 or 5 years. Jay Green cited several times in footnotes in Zelman. Mm-hmm. So I think we know that it's the height of cool fashion if Rick modifies like his online bio to start mentioning cited in the Flores.
Which would be cooler? Okay, Supreme Court citation or Arnie Duncan mentioning you in his speech?
This is just so lame. Or how about like getting invited?
What about the State of the Union? What if you get mentioned the State of the Union? Is that better than a Supreme Court? I mean, the Supreme Court thing is pretty darn cool.
these are important questions.
All right, well, they are important, Rick.
It just shows that how easily we're bought off, man. We should be demanding, like, Hanischek should be, look, I got you guys owe me a week in the Caribbean at some really sweet place. And like if we can just be happy because somebody mentions us in a footnote, it just means that we're a little too easy to please.
Woohoo, that's true. Okay, well, it is now time for everyone's favorite. This is the segment that does please our listeners.
Yes.
There's the segue. Amber's Research Minute. So, Amber, you decided to go ahead and review something that Rick worked on, helped
him
write. And what does this mean? Are you trying to get into Rick's good graces?
It means that we're doing the podcast earlier. Our listeners probably don't realize this, earlier than we normally do. And when I was on the metro train this morning, I realized I didn't have a research minute. So I went shuffling through my bag and lo and behold, found the Diplomas and Dropouts report that I had been meaning to read. So here it is.
Very
showcased
nice.
Today.
Rick, this is how you get in. This is it. You're like, we got nothing better. All right, let's go with the Rick Hess study.
Well, this only works well if she says nice things.
All right. Come on, Amber, tear it apart.
All right, so as we said, we're showing higher ed and Dr. Hess a little love this week with a new report out this month called Diplomas and Dropouts, Which Colleges Actually Graduate Their Students and Which Don't. It examines the completion rates of roughly 1,300 colleges and universities that are included in the Barron Selectivity Rankings. It found that less than 55% of first-time students at the average four-year college graduate within 6 years. This does not, however, include student transfers, which are harder to track. The report also showed lots of variation between the more and less selective colleges, as one would expect, with non-competitive institutions graduating on average 35% of their students within 6 years, and the most selective graduating 88%. Overall, graduation rates increased with selectivity status. But it also showed huge differences within the same selectivity categories, with some competitive colleges graduating just 12% of their first-time students in 6 years, and others graduating as many as 89%. The report closes with a plea for more transparency around college graduation rates, as well as tackling the harder work of ensuring students are college ready.
Nice. All right, now I have several questions, Amber, and perhaps Rick can answer some of these too. All right, so first of all right, so this relationship between selectivity and graduation, couldn't that also be a relationship between tuition and graduation? In other words, the more expensive colleges tend to have higher graduation rates because people are putting so much money down, they're not going to skip out.
That's definitely the kind of thing that you can look at out of this data. It's interesting that you'll find colleges that are less, right, even competitive institutions accept like 80% of their applicants. So, you know, we tend to vastly overestimate how selective most colleges are. But the reality is you get pretty far down in the pack and you'll still find institutions that are charging $25,000, $35,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So there's not a strong relationship between price and selectivity.
And now if I look at this report, can I get data for individual colleges?
Absolutely, you can. Okay. Alphabetized by state in the appendix.
And then is it broken out by state so we can like get a
it
statewide?
It is broken out by state.
I love it. Wow. Rick, this is nice.
Real asset for Ohio, baby.
I'm telling you. Cool. Very good. Yep. All right.
Nice job.
Nice job. That's it. That's all you got to say.
It was straightforward. It was iPads data. You know, I mean, I just thought it was clean. It was easy to understand. You know, it wasn't anything complicated. The transfers bit, which he explains, was harder to track, but in the end, it didn't make that big of a difference.
Yeah, it's and actually, my co-authors, of course, did all the actually smart heavy lifting. That was Mark Schneider, Kevin Carey, and Andrew Kelly. And you know, I mean, Mark used to run NCES, so these guys know these data inside out.
Nice. So these data were just sitting there? Nobody had thought to done this before?
I mean, it's funny. Actually, the data's actually been used a little bit. Like, Education Trust, for instance, has a lot of this information up. And it's. But one of the things that came out of this was how little awareness there was that this data actually is available.
All right. So, very nice. I know, I feel like we're kind of treating Rick with kid gloves here a little bit, going pretty smooth on this. I mean, after pummeling other studies.
If there was something to pummel, believe me, I would have pummeled it. I mean, I'm not playing favorites.
All right. So what's the song this week?
The song is, since our graduation rates are up and down within these selectivity categories, we have Roller Coaster by Blink-182.
Oh, nice.
We've heard of Blink-182, right? I mean, I'm kind of hip with them. They're kind of new.
We've heard of them.
I mean,
aren't they like 15 years old now? I think we heard of them.
They're not one of those Disney bands or anything.
Anyways.
Right, well, Disney bands, nice.
Well, there's a whole set of those Disney bands. Now,
like,
right?
Like the Jonas Brothers?
Yeah, I mean, the ones that, you know, Hannah Montana, that sort of thing. And thank you, Amber.
You're welcome.
The Hannah Montana of education research. I'm not sure
what that means.
That's meant to be a compliment.
She's the Nick Jonas of ed research nowadays. He is. I think he might even be more sparkly than her.
Yep.
Yeah. And Amber's wearing this whole frock thing going on with, like, her, like, Caribbean necklace thing. It's like a leather and rocks. You're a fashionista. You don't find a lot of head of research fashionistas.
Well, here you go. We've got one.
I mean, you can walk the corridors of many of the big research outfits, and you don't really find that kind of attention to shoes and necklace detail.
Mm-hmm. I guess so. I mean, you don't even notice when you don't have a shoe on when you're coming off the metro.
That was unfortunate. But I got my shoe back, so it all worked out for the best.
That's good, because otherwise you would have had to hobble over to Lost and Found.
It would have been a long. It would have been an awkward day. So you know, shout out to whoever it was in the.
Really expensive
shoes he's got on too. Well, it's tough. I didn't even realize the shoe was missing, and so it's always appreciated.
Would have been a shame if you had to go out and buy another pair of $12 flip flops.
No, 12. I think these are like 20 some, baby.
Okay, that has given us enough time now for Stafford to join us to rate that reform.
Stafford, you're all scarfed up, dog.
Okay, now Rick can give you a hard time for being all scarfed up.
I am scarfed up.
Are you sick?
No. I just like it's a pretty coral. Looking, it matches my bracelet.
Oh, that is. You know, you have more attention to accessories and matching around here.
Look, we are a fashionable place. Like, I mean, you can't. You know, it's you have to pay attention to these sorts of things.
I agree.
Like with your ideas. I mean, I don't know. Did you get a lot of attention for your college graduation study?
Yes, we did.
Okay, that's good, because you thought you worried about not just the substance.
Well, that because the report
the
had a nice cover. It was light blue.
Exactly.
It was
that's my point. And so Stafford has a nice
and the cover art that gentleman that you guys hooked us up with. Mm-hmm. He does terrific work.
Yeah. See, so there you go. All right, Stafford, are we talking about coral scarves or something else today?
We are not talking about coral scarves. So a few weeks ago, the police department in South Pasadena, California, discovered that city was developing a troubling trend: motorists blatant flouting of the school bus law. Most every state has one of these, usually a variant on the theme of flashing lights mean cars in both directions must stop while the bus loads or unloads children. The solution? A school bus sting. A school bus was stationed at the corner of a busy intersection, and two police cadets, posing as high school students, got on and off at different intervals. Police ticketed the cars that did not stop as they should with a $500 fine.
Wow.
Uproar ensued as motorists discovered that the planted bus was all a sham, and the police is now asking the South Pasadena's traffic court to forgive the offenses. I thought this idea was innovative and correctly identified the problem, namely speeding and not stopping for school buses, though I'm sure these police cadets didn't ever expect they'd be doing this kind of undercover work. And it's true that sitting behind a school bus making frequent stops can be incredibly frustrating, but school bus laws exist for a reason, and that's to safeguard the entering and exiting of children. I gave this one an A. I was not, however, as enthused by the police department's pansy response to community outrage. Of course, the people who got ticketed are pissed, but it serves them right for blowing past a stop school bus. South Pasadena police, stand up for your right to enforce the law. I hope the traffic court denies the police department's request. I gave this a D.
Whoa. Wow. She brought the heat.
Twists and turns.
It's,
I like that. We can, yes, pissed is allowed.
That's
because we're over the internet and over the
wow,
airwaves.
That's some fireworks right there. She brought that. That's like Jeff Coonerish.
That was some real
feeling
for that.
They got some coverage in the LA Times, and all of a sudden the police department's like, oh, just kidding. You know, we'll just retract all those tickets.
But, you know, I think this is an area where there could be some more public information awareness. Because, for example, if a city bus pulls over, you are allowed to blow past it,
mm-hmm.
Right? You know, but not blow, you know, slowly drive carefully to the side of it, I mean, right? Yeah. So it's a little confusing, perhaps, if you're used to slowly moving past a city bus that, you know, you forget that a school bus is different.
I absolutely disagree, because city buses do not have a huge stop sign that rotates out on an arm from the side of the bus that tells you to stop.
Okay, then that arm, they could have that arm go further, it could be lower, it could be so you literally could not pass that bus. I don't know, I'm just saying, we're not a terribly, you know, I don't. There's not a lot of awareness going on in our society today. I'm just saying, maybe people don't notice these flashing things anymore. Mm-hmm. We've got too many flashing things all around us all the time. Well, thank you. This was court-related to tie in with our special court related education gadfly show. All right.
That is all the time for this week.
And I'd say I'm not going to be here next week, but the show will go on. Mm-hmm. Andy Smerick will be here to co-host it with you. I'm going hiking in Appalachia next week.
Just kidding.
Though I am going to Mark Sanford's state of South Carolina. We'll see what the talk is down there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Education Gadfly Show, signing off.